Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Go. 1 week from today, it'll be show 1,000. We'll be live at the Chicago Blackhawk store. That's next Monday. This is this Monday. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Dave's back. How's your dad?
He's doing well, thank you.
Stephen D.C.?
That's his regards, yep.
And he's lobbyist there for who?
he's not lobbying very actively anymore at 93, but no, he's doing great.
Good.
Doing great.
Glad you had a couple days with him. Yeah, hey, let's do the top six brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Oh, we got a sticky button? We got a sticky button?
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
It's the voice of Chris Duffy. I gotta say, he sounds loaded this morning. He didn't know which way was up. Item number one, President Trump decided that the weekend would be a good time to call to fire players who declined to stand for the national anthem. A wave of protests on and off the field yesterday, and by rich white guys, who, generally speaking, rich white guys are generally on other rich white guys' side. Rich white guys are not on Trump's side on this. Rich white guys stood up and said, you need to stay out of this, and you need to shut up, and you need to be president and not the pseudo-commissioner of the National Football League, and you need to never tell us what to do, and your tickets are canceled, and don't call me. I think they said all of that.
Said all that. Even Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots.
His buddy.
Who's a buddy, and Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Redskins, who not too many people are fond of around,
right.
But he was locked arms with the players last night before the game with Oakland.
Yeah, and the Jacksonville owner, who is a University of Illinois product.
Right. They were over in London.
Mr. Khan, I can't think of his name. Is that his name, Khan? I think it's Khan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was locked down with the players as well yesterday morning. Kind of let off the whole thing because people didn't know what was going to happen. The Steelers actually stayed in the locker room and didn't even come out except for one player.
Right, former Army Ranger.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. I would never kneel for the anthem, personally. Mm-hmm. I would never kneel for the anthem. But we have an inscription on a wall out here, and it's from Voltaire. And there's an argument about who actually said it first and whether or not it's an accurate quote or not, but it's one of the historic inscriptions in the Tribune Tower. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know the specific quote, but I know the general, even though I look at it every day. The basics of the quote are the same thing you've learned since you were a little kid in school, which is, I may disagree with what you have to say, but I'll defend to my death your right to say it.
That's exactly what it is. I don't agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it.
So for that reason, I stand with the players who kneel as well. I think it's ridiculous. I think that they need to have a point. Mm-hmm. However, you cannot take free speech in this country, whether you're the president of the United States or the president of the American Legion, and say you can't have it. Mm-hmm. And that's what the president was talking about. And again, he's wrong. I agree with his thought that you should honor the flag. But you know what wins over? Defending the First Amendment.
Right.
It's why the Klan was allowed to march in Skokie in the 70s. It's why you had Charlottesville. It's for all of that. So, once again, a fight that nobody needs to be having. Next. President Trump citing national security signed new travel restrictions yesterday. The travel restrictions from the summer ran out yesterday morning. The new executive order will ban most citizens from Chad, Iran, Libya, North Korea, Somalia, Syria, Yemen as well. And you can't enter the United States unless you have specific reasons to be here. Iraq and some Venezuelans will also face restrictions. The some Venezuelans thing is funny to me. What, the left-handers? The tall ones? Yeah. I don't know. But that's in play again. It'll go into effect in the middle of October, and it's another headache to start the week, as is this. The Senate still says they're going to take a vote as soon as Wednesday on the brand new version of repealing and replacing Obamacare. Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy have shifted more money to Alaska and Maine to try to get the senator from Alaska's vote and the senator from Maine, the two women most prominent in the last debate and the last failed health care attempt, mm-hmm. where John McCain sunk it. Of course, McCain's already said no. And surprisingly, everybody's favorite, least favorite kid, Ted Cruz, yesterday said he's a no.
Yeah. And Susan Collins had an interesting take yesterday,
too. Can't imagine
it, right? Yep.
Next. Mrs. Trump overseas for the first time as First Lady without Donnie. Touchdown in Toronto, overseas, over border, to attend an athletic competition for wounded service members and vets. In an official speech with carefully selected words, Mrs. Trump told the American delegation to the Invictus Games to take that fighting spirit that I know you have and bring home the gold. And then she had a photo op with Harry, right? With
Prince Harry? She did, yeah.
Yeah, they're a cute couple.
I was going to say, they're very nice looking friends.
Dwayne, next. Dwayne Wade's done. Let's go now back to Dave. Dave is now at front of the United Center. Dave, what do you know?
Well, actually, I'm not. I'm outside the Advocate Center, which is right by the United Center.
It's very dark. It's hard to tell where
facility.
You are.
Yes. No, they reached a buyout with Dwayne Wade, which was expected. So he is going to go elsewhere and continue his career. And
so the Bulls now have five guys from a pickup league at the Y who are going to play for them this year, right?
That's pretty much the case. They did reach an agreement with Nikola Mirotic to come back. But
Nikola Mirotic, the American translation of that is, what the hell am I doing here?
It could be. But you look at their three alphas from last year, Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo.
Bye-bye.
All gone, so... I mean, it made sense.
Wade was supposed to come back here for two or three years, make a run at a title,
years,
and retire.
Yep. It was a great plan. Wow. He did tweet out his thanks to Chicago last night.
And finally, there's this headline in the Trib from Steve Rosenblum. Even in the dramatic win, Bears find a way to channel their inner stupid. There was a play, and we'll take this up with Hamp later, that somehow managed to combine, it's the end of the first half, managed to combine the stupidity of both teams and the officials all in one play. And there were five key moments in the play that sort of led to it. It stopped the game for 15 minutes, I would say.
I think it was about 15 minutes.
And then it appeared for a moment that one Pittsburgh Steeler would be on the field to defend the Bears as they went for at that point would have been a blowout touchdown. They, of course, blew that and got a field goal, and that got them to overtime.
Yeah. Left tackle overtime. Jumped. But anyway, that was one of the most bizarre things. And Marcus Cooper said, hey, he thought he was in.
Did he not see the line?
It's the thicker stripe.
Yes.
It's the thicker stripe. It goes 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's the thicker stripe, and you have to cross it. And I'd advise you youngsters listening, cross it at full speed.
Doesn't it have orange paint and say Bears on it, too?
Well, it does. Or Chicago on one end. And also, the guy in the striped shirt, when he throws his hands up
that's in the air. That's a key point.
Although,
key point.
Sometimes they don't. They forget.
Yeah.
Run, Marcus, run.
You don't stop running at the four for style points.
Right.
No. You know who was really happy about that? Hamp and OB. They were really happy about that.
Oh, they must have had a field day with that.
It's fantastic.
More from Hamp coming up a little bit later on at 6:21. A friend of mine was in Houston this weekend, and he'll join us next, talk a little bit about what they're going through. If you saw the 50th anniversary debut edition for the season, the 50th season of 60 Minutes last night. By the way, that Oprah story?
I was just going to say.
Okay.
I've
seen it on the news for 6 months. What did she do that was different?
I felt that, too. I thought there was build up, and I thought, all right, that's cool. That's okay.
You take the people that voted for Trump and the people that didn't vote for Trump, and you put them together, and then you hope they Shangri-La at the end, and they did a little bit. But that was so nothing.
I felt the same way.
Oh,
I was waiting for something spectacular.
Oprah, this is no way to have a career. I don't like Oprah's chances.
I don't think she needs it.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Let's do this. Sixth caller gets a desktop indoor weather station, which includes Tom Skilling for the weekend. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. The Houston story on 60 Minutes last night was fairly remarkable, and we'll get a bird's-eye view of what's going on the ground there from my pal, Dr. Dave Cullen, next. My friend Dr. Dave Cullen spent the weekend in Houston and is just back from it. And, if you saw the 60 Minutes piece last night about what amounts to a man-made disaster, the cause can be argued about for a long time. What's the reality on the ground, Dave?
Well, I came back from there last night. We spent 3 days there trying to help some families that were still digging out. And there's a lot of debris on a lot of the major, by the sides of the major roads and things like that, just piled up waiting for people to cart it off. That's the main problem, is just digging out from under all that stuff. And the people that we spent time with just haven't been able to return to their homes yet, because they were just completely wiped out. They're dealing with FEMA and other government agencies to try to recover some of their money. So when we saw the hurricane hit, we said we're going to wait a couple of weeks and then come down and just try to find families that needed assistance and just give them money, personally.
I was going to say, you lived in that town for how many years?
I lived there for about 5 years. A while ago, and nobody even thought about hurricanes. It's amazing. It just was completely, nobody was really prepared for that at all.
You can't prepare for 50 inches of rain, right? I mean, there's no way to prepare for that. The opening of the dams to make sure that they didn't fail caused epic flooding in parts of the city as well. So there's stuff that you talk about being piled up on the sides of the streets. I mean, it might sound like a silly question, but what does that town smell like now?
It's really, you know, the areas that I visited were, that part of it, yeah, that smells pretty bad. But for the most part, the city is, you could see where the water line is on a lot of the highways, how high the water went up. We're talking certain areas like 10, 15, 20 feet.
Right.
You can see where it was, and you don't know how anybody was able to function. But one family, when you bring that up, one family that we were with, their house really didn't flood that bad until they opened up the dam, you know, or
yep.
whatever it is that they flooded the houses afterwards. And so they thought they escaped pretty much unscathed, and then, boom, no house. So,
can you imagine dealing with that? Can you imagine that you survive the storm and then you find out that your house is going to flood and there's not a thing you can do about it?
They described it like, I don't know if you ever saw that movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Sure.
There's a big flood scene where they decide that all the houses in this one valley is just going to be flooded.
Yep.
And everything's fine, and then 1 minute, it's under 30 feet of water.
Dave, a friend of ours from Channel 9, his wife has family down there, so she's flying down now to help, and they are still putting out a call for volunteers, because in the beginning, everybody's there and helping, but now, as things try to start get back to normal and the cleanup continues, they're going back to their respective homes to try to clean up, too. So she's saying that, please, more volunteers, because the cleanup is still in its initial stages.
Well, Doc, a lot of this is church groups around the country flying in, right?
Absolutely. This is the time, I think, when we decided we wanted to go down. Okay, so the initial part of the whole effects of the storm are over with. Now people have really, a few months later, they're still going to reclaim their lives. They still don't have a place to live. The people we visited had to drive. FEMA was trying to relocate them 100 miles away from where they used to live, so the kids would have to go to different schools. So they were living in their cars, living in buses, just trying to get their life back. And the one family that we met had just moved into their house 2 weeks before the hurricane hit. They had purchased flood insurance, but the flood insurance wasn't activated because it was a 30-day wait period. They had done what they were supposed to do, and now they were 2 weeks before the flood insurance kicked in, and they still lost everything, lost all their belongings, all their vehicles, their entire house. So no insurance, and what do you do with something like that? So we just decided to go down there and with a couple of buddies and see what we could do to help them.
We were talking to Mike Jacobson, who produces the program here too, and he lived in Houston for a couple years, and about how it's hard to imagine the city that he knew that he lived in, the city that you knew that you lived in, and now the one you've seen, because it sounds like a tale of two cities, right? Because there's a portion of the city that emerged relatively unscathed, and the rest of it was a swimming pool.
Yeah, you can go wander around parts of Houston and go, hey, this looks great. Sun's shining. Everybody's going to work. But then there's still massive amount of devastation that has, you know, you're left to clean up your life, and who's there to help you? And so we decided to go do that. And then we're going to do the same thing in Puerto Rico. I think we're going to wait a while till it's safe to go down there. Obviously, now you've got all this initial just basic supplies like water and power and all that. Once it's restored, then people have to go about the business of actually starting to rebuild and function. So in a few months, or hopefully wherever it is safe to go down there, we'll go there and try to do the same thing.
You're a good man, my friend. I appreciate the update. I wanted to get your eyewitness account of it, because obviously we have not been there. So thanks for doing this.
All right. You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
I'll be on the phone with you later. He's a legend in radio, by the way, as well, Dr. Dave.
Dr. Dave.
Yeah. At 6:31, you're going to talk about the flag controversy coming up. He mentioned Puerto Rico. We don't have time to get into this now, but what are we doing? That's 3.5 million people. The vast majority of them are obviously Americans. These people don't have the generators they were told they were going to have. There's people who say that their roads are still blocked and nobody's there. Why isn't the U.S. Navy off the course to Puerto Rico right now? I mean, you know, it's
fair point. Yeah.
Sam, can you get us, see if we can get Senator Durbin on so we can ask him that the next day at 6:31. We'll be back and you'll do the big story next on 720 WGN.
First of all, our friend Ana Balaval from Channel 9 is on the phone with us. We're talking more about Puerto Rico and the aftermath of the hurricane. Ana joins us now. Hi, Ana. How are you?
I've been better.
Well, first off, how are your parents?
My parents are okay, Steve. We are very blessed. I never lost communication with my parents. My mom and dad live in San Juan, and they have a generator, and my dad was with a phone company that has the wires underground, and he thinks that's what made a huge difference for him.
Wow. Great.
But my mom and dad are 78 and 79, right. And what is heartbreaking is that just like the rest of Puerto Rico, they go to the supermarket and they stand in line and they're facing rations. Like my mom says, we got 2 cans of tuna, 1 gallon of milk. And we are a very thankful, positive people, right? So my mom says, but this is fine, Ana, because we're all eating, right? But she told me that the federal authorities have decided that the priority for the diesel is now for hospitals and emergency management agencies, so her generator is going to have to turn off because Wednesday they'll run out of diesel.
Yikes.
My brother has no generator, so him, his wife and 15-year-old daughter are sitting in the dark every night. And for about 2 days, they had no garage door, so my brother slept in the living room making sure no one would come into his house because there is crime. And my brother does not own a gun and is not the biggest fighter in the world. So, and these are people who are the lucky ones. The unlucky ones are the ones that have flooded my Facebook page begging me to find their families in the little towns in Puerto Rico.
Well, it's got to be heartbreaking for you. I mean, this is your home.
This is the place that I call home. I mean, Chicago is my second home. I've been here for 20 years. But those streets that you're seeing in San Juan completely destroyed, those are my childhood street, my teenager street, right. My school lost its roof. My niece is going to be out of school for a few months. I have friends there. My best friend survived this with her 2 daughters by herself because her husband was abroad and hasn't been able to come back.
Oh,
my other friend says she feels like she's in an episode of Lost.
Ana, not only was with the pylon and the recovery now, but as you mentioned briefly when you first came on, the flash flooding, and they're really watching the conditions at the dam in San Juan, which could be wave number 2 as far as catastrophe.
Yeah, what do you know about that? Is that dam going to hold, or is it multiple dams?
It's at one point I heard other bridges were giving away, right? So it's almost like they put a Band-Aid on one spot and something breaks on the other. That dam, our infrastructure is very weak. So I am sure they have the Army Corps of Engineers and our engineers trying to do the best to keep it. They're asking people not to go by the area. So it is a high risk. They literally, Friday when this happened, Steve and Andrea, they dropped everything. Like, I saw alerts on my phone, like, okay, they dropped everything and focused on that. Because that is what, pretty much like you said in Houston, that dam breaks, and whoever was lucky enough to be okay may now be damned.
Right,
pardon the pun, you know?
Right. What about the federal government? Are they there, and are they there in the right numbers?
They have been there from the beginning. Even we are a very politically divided island. We are a territory or a colony of the United States. So in one family, you can have a statehooder like my father and someone who believes in Puerto Rican independence like my brother. And for the first time, you're hearing them say that the help is on its way. My father was on Facebook Live with me on Saturday, and he was saying, you know, the help is arriving and it's here. But the lack of communication, Steve, is so huge that we can't see what's going on.
Right.
So there is a CBS correspondent that went to the airport. There are people there for 4 days that have nowhere to go. And they have no cots because we're an island 100 by 35 and, you know, clearly surrounded by water. So it's not easy to get to us. But, yeah, the federal government and the local government are doing the best they can. But it is overwhelming.
I've been impressed with your governor. I know he got elected in part by the infrastructure, you know, question. And you got elected saying, you know, we got to fix this soon.
Yeah.
Obviously, time ran out there. But is he a popular governor? And is he the right guy for the job?
Now he is. It reminds me a little bit of Bush during 9/11. You know, but this guy is a very smart guy. He's a doctor and a PhD. His dad used to be the governor of Puerto Rico, and he belongs to the statehood party, and comes from a very well-off family. But he has found in his heart the humility to deal with this and to remind people that this is about the safety and security of our people, right? And so he's been sympathetic. He's been listening. Can he do a lot? Well, he's been handed a mammoth project.
Sure, without a doubt. Talking to Anna Balaval from Channel 9. She's on her way to her assignment this morning, I'm sure. And you can see her on the Channel 9 Morning News every morning. Before we let you go, though, what can we do? If people want to help, well, what do you recommend?
So if you go to my Facebook page, you have places, Casa Puerto Riqueña, and I say it kind of like in English so you understand me.
I appreciate that.
Casa Puerto Riqueña, which is on California, is going to collect goods all week. They've already sent their first shipment yesterday on a United flight that Congressman Gutierrez was able to get from Oscar Munoz, the CEO of United. I got word of that. There have been fundraisers. So keep going up. I've seen all over Facebook that besides summer clothing, water, batteries, and flashlights, because remember we're talking about maybe months without power, chargers for the phone, and then the typical food, diapers, all that, and mosquito repellent. Apparently, the mosquitoes are having a field day. Like my friends say, they've never seen it this way. So that kind of stuff. Here's the thing. The post office is not open yet. I thought it was going to open today, so I was going to send my parents a care package, but I can't yet. So if you feel like you need to do something, do that. The Federal Affairs Agency, the Puerto Rico Federal Affairs Agency, has a great website where you can find places to securely donate. And I went to something called Puerto Rico Rises on Saturday, too, on Lincoln Avenue, and they're going to have more drives. This is going to be a long haul. I'm supposed to go for Christmas. And I'm hoping to do so. I'm trying to convince my parents to come at some point and take a break.
Right.
But my very, very Puerto Rican parents feel very blessed that they're okay. And I think my mom is deathly afraid of being cold here. So she'd rather stand in line for two cans of tuna. because they're older and they're afraid of, you know, getting sick. I'm more afraid of their safety, but we'll see. Maybe I get to convince them.
Well, I hope. Listen, you could convince me of doing just about anything. So I hope it works on your parents. And I thought they look amazing on TV, and I can't imagine how tough they are. But it's tough on everybody, like you said, and they're the lucky ones. I really appreciate the update. God bless you. And if people go to your Facebook page, you've got those resources you talked about, at least listed to the link there, right?
I do. And ask me any questions you want and reach out to me. And I hope you get Senator Durbin so that he gives you what I give you is, you know, my dad's perspective and what he's been telling me from there. And what people have been sending, you know, I follow a lot of Puerto Rican media. And I apologize for those that follow me for Chicago news. I'm a little preoccupied with what's going on, and I appreciate your support. It's been crucial, and I'm gonna try and be as perky as possible and around town. But if I mess up more than usual, now you know what's in my brain, right?
Yeah,
well, you got a lot
entitled.
Going on. Yeah.
You're entitled. All right, thanks
Anna.
Annabelle Laval.
Yeah, she's great. We'll keep updated, too.
And we don't need a traffic report here because we're going to have one in like 2 minutes, and we know that you're all driving safely. We'll come back with that next on 720 WGN. Back with Dr. Kevin Most. I'm turning switches off, turning switches on. Don't let me touch anything.
Don't touch that. Right.
That's the greatest success for this show is if I don't get to touch stuff. Brought to you by Northwestern. What's that?
Hey, it's Monday. You're new to this job, so...
You would think I could handle it by now. Right. Brought to you by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. By the way, we should congratulate our friend Dr. Most. Mm. He has a vacation home of sorts, if you will, in North Carolina, and he just closed on it now and is officially broke.
Oh.
Yes, he has no money left at all.
So cancel our weekend plans to go down there and stay in the house.
No, he had to sell it. He closed on it on Thursday, sold it Friday.
No, it will be a very nice place for all of you to visit, and... it's amazing how you buy a house and then the costs start to go after that.
Yep, without a doubt. All right, so here's where we stand with this bill. It's allegedly going to get voted on in the Senate on Wednesday, assuming they pull off some miracle, because it looks like they're going to need one now, and it gets to the House. The House would still have to pass it. But turning over all of this to the states, start with the Medicaid piece of this. What does it mean?
Yeah. So the way Medicaid works right now, depending on what state you live in, a portion of Medicaid is paid for by your state budget, and a portion of it is paid by the federal budget. So people think, oh, I thought Medicaid was a state issue. No, it's federal as well as state. So what this bill says is, you know what, state of Illinois, and I'm making these numbers up, you spent $250 million on Medicaid last year. That was the federal government's portion to your constituents. We are going to give you that $250 million, and that's it. We're done. Because the way Medicaid works now, it's a per-click, essentially. So it was $250 million, but let's say we had a really bad flu season or something really bad happened. It could have been $300 million from the federal government side because they would pay as patients used it. What they're saying is the line's drawn in the sand. Here it is. Now you manage the money. And as a matter of fact, you better manage it really well, because in a couple of years, we're going to start to cut it, and we're going to cut it more, and we're going to cut it more.
The idea with the majority of the states in this country being broke, that block grants will be turned over to the states, and there would be hope that they would spend it on the right things, with no specific wording that I've seen in the legislation that limits them to spend it the way the government says they should. You can't predict the future. And if states continue to be broke, they're going to move money where they need to move it, which creates an even bigger health care crisis, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And the other thing this bill allows the states to kind of mold it, saying, okay, we understand you're going to only have a limited amount of funds here. Now you decide how you're going to do that. So this would allow them to drop things. It would allow them to remove many things that are in the federal insurance regulations. So it would allow them to charge older patients more. It would allow them to minimize or not totally cover some illnesses or injuries. So I think it's dead in the water, to be honest with you. You already have McCain saying no, Rand Paul saying no, Cruz saying no, Murkowski saying no. I can tell you that it was a large portion of our talk, our discussion last week in Washington. And everyone, I don't know y'all understand that the timing of this has to be done by Saturday, mm-hmm. because the reconciliation period ends on October 1st. And reconciliation is what allows the federal government here, the Senate, to pass something with just a simple majority. But it must be something that impacts the federal budget. Those are the limits, and this is the way that they're going to try to do it, but I don't think they're going to. It also eliminates the employer mandate and the individual mandate as well. So I think it's not going to go anywhere, but it's still kind of interesting that we're even pushing it.
Yeah, because we sort of thought this was over. And once again, the Democrats were sleeping and the Republicans put this together, but they still don't have the key people they need while so many others rolled over. The most amazing quote that came out of all of this was Senator Grassley from Iowa last week when he said, yeah, there's 10 reasons why I couldn't support this bill. But, you know, we made promises, and the promises are as important as the content of the bill. No, they're not. The bill controls people's lives, what they have and what they don't have. The promises controls whether or not you're reelected. For a guy like Grassley, who's been in office that long, to be that jaded and that blind, where he said he could say it out loud and there wouldn't be any consequences, well, maybe there won't be, but there sure as hell should be.
Well, Stephen, I think you're going to start to see the true, I don't even know what to say, about each of these senators and how they vote. And you look at Senator McCain and what he's going through, but he's also looking out for his constituents very well.
Right.
He's saying that this bill has gone too far. And then you have Rand Paul saying it hasn't gone far enough. Well, those two votes right there, depending on which way you swing, is going to impact the other guy as well. You'll start to see some additional money being thrown at some of these states to try to woo some of these guys. But hopefully they're also going to realize that money is only there for a short period of time. And I got to be honest with you, most states are not very good at managing Medicaid money. And given the opportunity or the thought process of this is the only money that you're going to get, you will start to see states making cuts. And that is going to be very difficult to our people.
And when doctors are leaving the business or not getting in the business because they're making 30 cents on the dollar or 35 cents on the dollar for the care that they're giving, these dominoes fall in a particular direction. So you got a brilliant kid who could turn out to be a great doctor who decides, well, no, you know what? I'm going to go into research, or I'm going to go do something else with my life and my brain because this is not an appealing profession anymore. We can't have that.
No, we really can't. And I'm telling you, the brain drain portion of it, you're absolutely right. You know, we're telling people now, you know, young kids, hey, go into computer science, go into artificial intelligence, go into cybersecurity. You know, we're not saying, hey, rush to us and come on, medicine is still fun. And that's unfortunate. I mean, a lot of us still feel we're in it for the love of the game. We're in it because it's not because we make a lot of money. It's not because of, you know, the financial portion of it. It's because we really enjoy what we do. And if you get to a point where you don't wake up in the morning thinking I'm going to make an impact on a patient's life, and you get up saying I didn't make enough money, well, you're in the wrong profession.
So, no, well said. Yeah. But, I'm sure that there are a portion of your folks that do miss the days of doctors being rich and taking every Wednesday off to play golf. But those days are gone, Doc. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's right. We changed to Fridays.
Thanks for the update, and I appreciate the information. We were going to talk about over-the-counter meds and prescriptions and things of that nature, but we had to hit the news first, and we'll do that if not by next Monday, maybe even sooner. Thank you, Doc.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
Brought to you by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better, and we're back with the news next.
An animal!
Dan Hampton. Anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Well, 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 well. I am really glad I was wrong. Dan Hampton, Hall of Famer, joins us. Brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com. You know, Hamp, a win's a win's a win's a win's a win, even if it looks like Roseanne Barr right when she wakes up in the morning.
How delightful. You're exactly right. And we are. We are happy. The beloved actually was able to pull one out. And I got to tell you, it was a nutty game. When you have a quarterback that it hits one completes one pass to a wide receiver, has basically less than 100 net yards throwing the ball. In today's NFL, you play the second half where you end drives with a punt, a fumble, a punt, an interception, and two punts, and you win the game. Man, you have every right to have a little bit of a celebration. And so for the first time in 3 years, the Chicago Bears win in September, and we're very happy.
A win is a win is a win, Dave, even if it looks like me when I wake up in the morning. A win is a win.
Or Roseanne Barr.
Yeah, either one of us.
Either one. But, well, Hamp, if the Marcus Cooper play doesn't happen, if just forget that that ever took place, does this game leave you with a different taste than it sounded like it left you with when I was listening to you and OB and Kaz after the game?
Well, there's a lot about this game that is disturbing because, you know, winning a game against a sleepwalking Pittsburgh Steelers team, and you know what? You know, the Steelers are who they are. They came in here. It's not the steel curtain anymore. It's the aluminum screen door. And, hey, our running game got going. Cal Long helped. Jordan Howard toughed it out. And Tariq Cohen made some nice plays. But where are we? You know, what do you got when it's all said and done? Are we a better team now than we were at the beginning of yesterday? I don't know. I'm just saying there was a lot of good stuff, but it was a very perplexing win because we're not worried about beating, you know, a team in September. We want to be in the playoffs. We want a team that can make an effort and hopefully someday soon go and win a Super Bowl. So all those things, but there were so many different things about the way this game played out, and again, perplexing. Well, on one hand, hey, we're happy that our secondary accepted the challenge on a very hot day. We got great play from Kyle Fuller, Mukamara, Marcus Cooper. Obviously, that one play on the block field goal aside, Bryce Callahan, a sack with a strip fumble. I mean, a lot of good stuff. But then again, hey, you know, you're not going to win games in the NFL on a consistent basis when some of the other parts of your team play so poorly. So, yeah, we're happy. But, hey, I've when I was a kid, I had a real junky car. Sometimes it got me to school. I was real happy. But I was worried about the ride back home. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind
of like in other words, there's a lot of work still to do. We'll ask the age-old question, did they beat us or did they beat themselves? Do we have a quarterback controversy or don't we? And we'll do the Zapruder film, the Marcus Cooper play as well, because we believe there may have been a second idiot not running fast enough not to get tackled behind the grassy knoll. All of that still to come with Hamp, brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Stand by, Hamp, and let's go to Mary.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Bill, I hope you're still listening. I want to thank you for mentioning Brian's song, which was one of the great movies about athletes, our own dear Brian Piccolo. And I was in the movie. And, Bill, I'd like to, in case you forgot or didn't know, I was up for an Emmy. Okay? It was, what are you laughing at?
I'm mad that you didn't win it.
Hold it. I was up for an Emmy. It was me against Robert De Niro. Don't laugh. When the final votes came in, it was 5,000,001 to 1. He just narrowly nipped me at the wire.
Well, Google could be wrong. Ed Obradovich tells great stories, period. I don't care whether they're factual or not. Because I would have given him an Emmy, an Oscar, a Tony, and more.
Ed was in two movies.
What was the other one?
He was in Brian's Song, Goes to 1971, Camp? Coach of the Year.
Oh, of course.
Football. Ed appeared as Ed Obradovich.
You know, it's funny about IMDb, as we rejoin Dan Hampton, the Hall of Famer. They will list your credits.
Coach of the Year, starring John Fox.
They'll list your credits over and over again, but like in the case of Obi, it says Ed Obradovich played himself on the NFL Today.
Yes, he did.
Of course he did.
He did.
All right, we got to.
Whoa, one more thing.
Oh, yes.
They filmed Brian's song down at Rensselaer in Rensselaer, Indiana. And Obi used to, I said, how was that, you know, going to Rensselaer training camp every year. He said, let me tell you, my kids grow up and I hate them. I'm going to send them.
I'm going to send them to college.
You know, the best thing that can happen to you, if you love the Bears and you love a great story, the best thing that can happen to you would be to be caught in a broken elevator with Ed Obradovich, because the man can tell a story.
About Butkus, about Hallis, about everyone.
Yeah.
It's unlike anything I've ever experienced.
And some of it's terrible.
But I digress. You were talking about Marcus Cooper and his excellent play.
Okay, so here's the deal. Now, I've never seen anything quite like this, because you had a confluence of stupid. You had the Bears stupid plus the Steelers stupid plus the officiating stupid all in the course of 15 minutes of my life I'll never get back again. Cooper blocks, or the kick is blocked. Cooper picks it up on a hop. He goes the distance, but decides to jog it in from the five. We've seen it a million times. The faster guy from behind punches the ball out of his hands. Then, another moment of stupid, the kicker slaps the ball out of the back of the end zone. Then the officials get together, and they can't decide if the Steelers are on offense or on defense on the play, so the half's over. And both teams end up leaving the field, except the Bears are sort of still there. One Steeler comes out to play defense. The Bears line up to run the one play. Maybe they should take the points. It's not exactly an offensive juggernaut. You got an offsides penalty. Now they're back 5 yards. They kick the chip shot field goal, and they go in. And the officiating crew is still walking around going, was that me? Was that my bad? I'm telling you, Hamp, I've never seen anything like it.
What about John Fox and his assistant coaches running along the sidelines with their hands above their head in the safety signal?
Well,
thinking that it was a safety for the Bears. I trust me, that would have been a must-see moment in the conference room with the with Kaz and OB during that point. It was mayhem.
I thought it was a walk like the Egyptian video redo when they put their hands over their head.
But on one hand, everybody is wondering, okay, if Cooper scores there, then you're not in overtime and the Bears win the game and everything's great. On the other hand, what if they don't let him run the untimed play?
You lose the game in regulation.
Then they end up losing the game. That field goal turned out to be huge.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, it's crazy.
The whole thing, it really was. It was surreal, and it was bizarre. But more importantly, the officials finally did get it right. See, obviously, Cooper took possession of the ball. Then, by the virtue of that, the Steelers are now on defense.
Right.
So you cannot end the half on a defensive penalty. The penalty was the holder knocking the ball out.
Oh, that was a kicker. It was the holder.
Yeah, it was the holder.
Got it.
Trust me. Anyone that wants to be that's learning the game of football, this would be about a 3-hour discussion explaining why everything happened the way it did.
You know, I think ultimately they got it right, but it was just to get to the point where they got it right was just made your head explode.
But here's the thing I don't understand. It's an NFL officiating crew that goes through a certain amount of training and obviously experience to get to that level.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be the best in the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the ball and I no longer have the ball, I'm now on defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
seems to be fairly clear.
That part of it, I think, is pretty certain.
It seems so simple.
Yeah.
It's like Dr. Seuss.
I don't get it. We needed Hooked on Defense. You know, remember Hooked on Phonics?
Defense for dummies.
Now, this was in the end kind of a footnote for the larger part of the game. So the question now becomes, the quarterback was not impressive. Do we have a quarterback controversy? Do we not? I don't know, you put Trubisky in Thursday night against the Packers. You're coming off a win. I don't even think it's a consideration now, is it?
Ultimately, they do not want to take a chance with the psyche of this kid. Either in this matchup, the bottom line, as bad as Glennon played in Tampa, common sense would tell you, hey, you can't continue to go down this road. Well, John Fox and this offensive staff, they didn't want to put him in a position against the Steelers or on the road against the Green Bay on Thursday night on a short week of virtually no preparation. the conventional wisdom is, oh, we got 11 days to get ready for the Vikings. That could be the week. All I'm saying is it'll be high time because if you go back and watch what Mike Lennon's doing, he's really, really sabotaging this team's opportunities to win. Yeah, we won despite him yesterday, but when you complete one pass to a wide receiver during the course of a more than 60-minute game, it was overtime. And they basically did not even want him attempting a pass in overtime. It was all done on the ground by Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, which thankfully worked out. But Thursday night, and I said this at the end of yesterday's show, I don't know who's still got a VCR. I've got one. Hey, I'm still locked in the 90s. I got a VCR. If you want to see Mike Lennon as the better quarterback, you better take Thursday night's game because if it doesn't go well, you may not see it again. Yeah, and it could be a collector's item.
Last word, Dave.
VHS or beta. Is it going to be, again, the Bears' corner is getting tested deep by Aaron Rodgers as they were yesterday by Ben Roethlisberger? Same kind of deal?
Sure. And you know what? Hey, they Atlanta with Julio, Mike Evans in Tampa, that bunch yesterday. I mean, this is the creme de la creme of the NFL. Well, guess what? We got Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb and those guys. But here's the thing. The Packers, they, by hook or crook, crawled off the canvas yesterday and came back and won after being down 21-7. We watched that game almost play by play, and Cincinnati got after him. They sacked him. They batted Aaron Rodgers around most of three quarters. Finally, at the end of the game, you know, the Packers were able to do what they normally do, which is, you know, improvise and make plays. But we need to do the same thing. The only team that has beaten the Packers since Thanksgiving last year is the Atlanta Falcons. They've done it twice, and how did they do it? They got after him at the line of scrimmage and rush the passer. That's what we got to do. They're not going to beat you running it. They want this young man, Aaron Rodgers, to be the star, and we can't let him do it on Thursday. But we'll talk about it 8:40 come Thursday morning.
There you go. Look at you planning your week. And balls in the air by 9:15 at a golf course near Hamp. Stand by.
And at 8:39, I'm going to spill my coffee. Marcus Cooper, senior fashion.
It's the great Dan Hampton, Hall of Famer. Thank you as always, buddy. Brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired. I know we have freedoms and we have freedom of choice and many, many different freedoms. But you know what? It's still totally disrespectful. And you know, when the NFL ratings are down massively. Now, the number one reason happens to be that they like watching what's happening on, you know, with yours truly.
It's just, it's inexplicable. You know, Donald Trump in the middle of a summer day in July would chase a hornet just to get him to pay attention to him. So let's get Ryan Nobles in here. I was thrilled and delighted, as Mel Brooks might say. I was thrilled and delighted when I kicked on CNN this morning before I came to work. And there was Ryan Nobles, handsome anchor.
There I am.
Doing the early CNN show this morning. He's still sort of awake right now. Thanks for staying up.
No problem. Yeah, those early morning hours have a very special constituency of viewers, and I would suppose they'd be morning radio hosts would be among them. So I'm glad you were tuning in.
I would hope you wouldn't include me in morning radio hosts. You know what I'm saying? No, it was great. Yeah, you did a wonderful job. No surprise there. It's frankly a walk in the park compared to the reporting you have to do. So is there any way to explain other than, well, we knew it, he's that guy, that Trump started a fight with the National Football League and took a small problem and made it a big one?
Well, let's take a look at all the things that Donald Trump is confronting right now. You know, enormous natural disasters that have millions of Americans, because Puerto Ricans are American citizens, without power, food, and shelter. He's on the verge of yet another collapse of a plan to reform health care. He's on the verge of unveiling a tax reform plan that's going to probably meet the same fate that their efforts with health care did. And he's also in a squabble with a foreign dictator who holds nuclear weapons. So what does he decide to do? He decides to pick a fight with really what is the American pastime, which is the NFL. And, you know, on its face, it seems like a really dumb idea. Why would you want to go there? But, Steve, I have to tell you that I think this was a really smart thing for the president to do if his goal is to strengthen his base. Because I know, like, on my Facebook feed, I have friends of all different stripes, and there's a clear divide here. There are a lot of people who think that the president is 100% on the mark with his criticism of the NFL and its players, and then there's another group of people that believe that he went way too far and doesn't seem to understand the point of nonviolent protest. And, you know, what the end goal here may be is just to make sure that he has that base of support rock solid and behind him as he goes forward with these really difficult things that he has in front of him, many of which may end up in failure.
The secret of life, though, as our mothers taught us, was it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And yeah. As a private citizen, any of us are entitled to say, you know, as I stated at the top of the show today, what I believe. I would never take a knee during the anthem. I believe you stand and you stand proudly for the country you're blessed to live in. But I would defend anyone's right to kneel and to protest, no matter how much I didn't like it. I'm not the president. He is.
Yeah.
That's the position he has to take.
Yes. And the other thing I would point out, too, is when you're talking about the freedom of speech, you know, and this is a debate that often gets conflated, you know, the freedom, your freedom of speech is that you are protected from the government doing anything against you.
Like telling a private business to fire people.
Exactly. And we need to remind everyone that he's the president of the United States. He represents the government. He is the government. So, you know, when you talk about a violation of freedom of speech, I think an argument can be made there. But I think the other point that I think is lost in all of this, and I've covered politics for a really long time now, and I've always found that when it comes to protest, people always go back on their complaints about the type of protest. And I found this, whether it's a liberal protest or a conservative protest, that the criticism usually comes from people who often also don't agree with the reason for the protest. So they use the protest itself as a mechanism to complain about the actual reason that someone is protesting. And I think this is another good example because Donald Trump found a way to find good people in that group of people carrying tiki torches and wearing Nazi symbols in Charlottesville. But yet, in this case, he can't understand at all why these athletes who are putting millions, you know, their million-dollar careers at stake to make a point, somehow he can find no good or a reason behind that at all.
To preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, so help me God. It's the final words of the presidential oath. It's your job. That's the oath. You took the oath. You put your hand on the Bible. You took the oath. The Constitution secures the right of the Klan to march in Skokie, of Nazis to assemble in Charlottesville. All of that. We can hate all of it, but it has to be allowed. That's what free speech was, more the brilliance of the founding fathers of this country. He doesn't understand the job, which is why he's not qualified to stay in the job, and why this isn't the number one concern for Congress, as opposed to trying to find another way to overturn Obamacare, is just malpractice. It's 7:50. Let's get traffic. I got to ask Ryan Nobles about North Korea, because honestly, that probably should be, along with the natural disasters, our number one concern.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
And I will destroy him with my death ray, with my super secret laser. It's all like a movie. It's like a movie in his head. It's not really happening. I mean, we could use nuclear weapons a little bit, can't we? Ryan Nobles rejoins us at Ryan Nobles all over social media, of course, for CNN. So North Korea, here's where I think North Korea's got a big problem. Yes, Donald Trump could be crazier on some level than Kim Jong-un. But, Ryan, even more so than that, if you go with the generality, and it's dangerous, but if you go with the general feeling that there needs to be a saving of face as part of the Asian culture, the more Kim Jong-un responds and spouts off, the more he puts himself in a position where he has to do something. And we believe we know he doesn't want to die and that he's smart enough to know that if he starts a war, he will.
I think it's a great point, Steve. You know, the cult of personality that's built up around Kim Jong-un is that this possibility that he is bold enough to take some sort of dramatic stand against nations that are much bigger and much stronger than North Korea. And I think that's why his followers, in part also because they're kind of trained from a young age that he is this deity. But that's part of why, you know, he's able to maintain the strength that he has in his country, because his people believe that he is big enough and tough enough to take on these big countries. So when the rhetoric starts to heat up at the level that it is, and then you have someone like Donald Trump who's basically calling his bluff, you have to wonder, would he do something dramatic to make that point? But I always go back to, you know, your original point on this, that it's never going to get any better for Kim Jong-un, right? There's no scenario by which he provokes military action and it turns out okay for him.
Right.
Now, there's a scenario where it's really bad for the rest of us, but it's literally the best it's going to get for him, and he has got to understand that, right? He can't be stupid enough to think that some sort of military action is going to lead to a better outcome for him, because there's just no scenario by which that occurs, and I have to think that keeps him from pressing the button on doing something truly dramatic.
I've maintained for a while now that the Thanksgiving analogy of the kids' table applies here, and that is adults maybe not happy about sitting at the kids' table, but at least they still get turkey. So why couldn't Kim Jong-un be at the kids' table with the other leaders of the world we tolerate and don't necessarily include in all the grown-ups' conversations? Pakistan comes to mind, certainly Iran if the nuclear deal stays in place. Folks that we have to have conversations with, but we may not be happy doing it. Why couldn't he be there? And have you heard of any scenario where that discussion of we're going to talk to these folks will now be heated up again and there will be some sort of third party diplomatic discussions?
I think the problem with Kim Jong-un is that he's gone too far, you know, even further than some of these other rogue nations that you're talking about. And then the other scenario is that the relationship that he has with China is on such a different level than some of these other places. And, you know, I think that there's always, you know, I don't remember which one of the cabinet secretaries it was, if it was Jim Mattis or Tillerson, they said there's always a diplomatic option. We're never going to close the door on a diplomatic option. But the form that diplomatic option takes place in is really hard to comprehend, you know, especially when you take when you look at the tack that Trump has taken with this, where he's been so aggressive in his posture, you know, it obviously would have to go through China. It would have to be some sort of almost quiet negotiation. But then I always go back to this point, Steve, and you and I have had this conversation a bunch of times. We don't seem to really understand what Kim Jong-un wants. What does he want? Like, you know, we joke, does he want the season pass to the NBA so he can watch every NBA game? We don't even know if it's something that simple.
Right.
He seems to just enjoy the saber rattling. I think it's hard when, you know, in all these other places, these things that you mentioned in Pakistan and Iran and Syria, you know, you can kind of have an idea as to what these wacko leaders have in mind for their end goals. With Kim Jong-un, it just seems so unclear what his true motivation is.
It's our friend Ryan Nobles. He covers the news, so you don't have to. And I highly recommend him on social media as well, at Ryan Nobles. Do you get a nap today, or you go right back to work?
I actually already took a nap. I'm going to be back on a train to Washington, D.C. later this afternoon. So, yeah, don't cry for me. I'm going to be perfectly fine today.
Well, you know, it's a good gig and a better head of hair. best of the family. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a great week.
See you later. That's Ryan Nobles. He's great. Good anchor, too.
Yeah, he is. He's anchoring this morning.
Yeah. Woke up, saw Ryan Nobles on my TV. Everything was better. Let's see. It's 8:01, and this will shock you. We're late. I'm going to fix that problem right now and say Dean's next. News first, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Dean Richards joins us, 8:16. Dean is Dean sponsored? Woo-hoo. Dean is sponsored by Dave Ennett and Dave Ennett's dad.
Yes.
Spend the weekend with Dave Ennett's dad whenever you can.
I appreciate the sponsorship.
Dean is sponsored by Hyundai.
Oh, all right then.
That's what the tattoo on my backside says.
All right, well, congratulations to all of you.
People don't know that when they sponsor my segment, I actually put a tattoo of their business.
Oh, you do?
On my backside.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. Hey, guess what I did yesterday?
Went windsurfing?
Nope. Keep trying. We're not going to move on until you guess it. Now, I got a new phone and...
just say golf.
I can't tell you how much work it is to get a new phone now.
Did you get the 8?
I got one last
week. The 10?
Same thing.
Yeah, no, I got the... No, because I'm an Android guy.
I know. I just want to see if you converted.
He's not Apple. He doesn't even like to eat apples.
I actually enjoy apples and apple cider. Mm-hmm. I got the Samsung Note, you know, the one that used to catch on fire on airplanes. I got the non-fire one, the new one, the 8. It's great. But here's the thing. If you use your phone like I do, where everything goes through your phone, everything's on your phone, everything, I mean everything, it is a huge pain to change to a new phone.
Because you have to transfer everything
over. Well, you back it all up, but then you don't want to necessarily take it all over, and you got to move this, you got to move that. So I'm going through the whole thing, and I'm thinking, yeah, the Puerto Ricans are in a rougher position than I am right now. Yeah, there's people around the world who have a few more problems than me. But it does create a new job opportunity, I think. And that's somebody needs to invent the system where they take your phone. And don't tell me one transfers to the other flawlessly. It doesn't. I've been there.
Nope.
They take your phone, and they sit with you like they're doing your taxes. And they go, what do you want? What do you not want? Go through it. You hand them your phone. You go grab some lunch. You come back, and it's done.
Yeah, it's like an iPhone, like a phone personal assistant.
Yeah, because the phone concierge, because the phone stores don't even want to do it anymore. The phone stores are it's self service. It's like here's your phone. Go home, fix it.
I actually did go to a phone store, and they did everything that did not require a password.
Well, it's because you're Dean Richards.
They converted everything that was not password related.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been left alone at the Genius Bar. It's a lonely place.
Yeah, I'm sure you were hit on at the Genius Bar.
A genius. Hey, look, there's a girl down there.
Yeah, you knew it.
I actually, when I went in, I went to the He Means Well Bar. They didn't let me go into the Genius Bar. But anyway, I like this. Now, I don't get a dime for saying this. Believe me, I paid full price. But this Verizon, it wasn't Verizon, it's Samsung Note 8. Slick. It's cool. I like it. Yeah, I like it. I'll never have it fully up and running until I have to change to my next phone, but I like what I have so far.
Doesn't have facial recognition, though.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, uh-huh. Not my face.
Oh.
No, but other faces. Yeah, you could open it.
Or you could do what I do, which is use an iPhone and then upgrade it to the iOS 11, and now it stays charged for about 25 seconds.
Oh.
Did you back up everything? That was like a big warning all weekend on the.
I haven't backed up, but it's...
back it all up before you go to 11.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a conspiracy to get me to buy the new phone that Andrea is buying.
Oh, by the way, speaking of that, I'm glad you brought this up because here's the warning, Dean. You're an iPhone Apple guy too, right?
I am.
Okay, you Android people, listen to me. Listen to me. Listen to me. You looking at me? Listen to me. You know how Apple took all the money, and Apple was making you buy new chargers every 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations, Android. They're on board now. All of those mini USB chargers, useless. I've got 500 of them.
Yeah.
They're all useless. They got a brand new slot they've created for the new era 2017 and beyond phones.
Apple
and
did
it's
the
not
same
a
thing.
Mini. Yeah, exactly. Apple started stealing your money. Yeah. Android's stealing your money now, too.
Mm-hmm.
You can use them as like bungee cords.
That's for mice.
That's the thing. No. You look at them and you go, what do I do with these? So now a lot of the phone stores will take them back and they'll recycle them or they say they'll give them to a charitable outlet. Like there's domestic violence shelters where they can turn the phones in, things
needy
like that.
Needy people who have one generation down.
The homeless, right.
That's why, Steve, I stayed with my Razor flip phone.
I thought you had, you upgraded from the bag phone, Dean?
If you come to the Meanswell bar, we can explain it all to you. Stevie Wonder's in the news. J-Lo's in the news. Jay-Z's in the news. Luke Bryan's in the news. By the way, Dean, I heard a Jay-Z story, you know, with all this NFL talk this weekend.
Yeah.
Remember last week Jay-Z was supposedly asked to do the halftime show?
Well, that was never confirmed, but yes, there was that story.
The story is that Jay-Z's people leaked it, and there was never an offer. By the way, why would there be? You got to be somebody like me that likes Jay-Z's music. It's a smaller group. Significant. He's got a little cash, but it's not the wide swath of America that you need for a halftime show for the Super Bowl.
He's pretty popular, but I know what you mean.
Yeah.
He's not Beyonce.
He's not crossing over.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the same way. So Jay-Z threw it out there. So I would like to start a rumor this morning, and I've been asked to do the halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Comedy?
Really?
You going to do some stand-up?
Nope. They just got a chair. I come out. I criticize Trump for 10 minutes.
Any costume changes?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go from the blue golf shorts to the tan.
Probably blue to black.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will you be
mood.
Taking a knee during the show?
No, because how am I going to get up? You know, I'd have to have a
that
spotter.
Could be half the show.
I'd have to have a spotter help me up with my knees.
It could be half the show right there.
So again, Dean, if you want to run with this on TV this morning, I have been offered the halftime show for the Super Bowl.
I'll get that right on.
Okay, excellent.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972. Oh, 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 oh.
All right, back to Dean. How was your weekend, by the way?
It was fine. I had a nice, relaxing weekend. Yesterday, after my little radio show, I went over to Grant Park for Chicago Gourmet.
Right, Andre, you covered that, didn't you?
I did. It was fantastic. Wasn't it, Dean?
I guess so.
Oh.
I guess so. It's a lot of waiting in line.
It was. It was hot. I mean, it was 95 degrees while
you
were notching on bacon.
Why are you waiting
in
line? You're Dean Richards.
Because I don't like the, excuse me, I know you're all waiting in line, but I'm Dean Richards.
Well, I would have done it for you.
Do I would you know have who
said,
he is?
I would and have then said, when you get, Dean's here, let him in front.
Yeah, then when you get up to the, you know, you wait in line for like, you know, 20 minutes, and you get like a tablespoon of pasta.
Yeah, that purser. It was cool. It was the 10th anniversary, and they had Curtis Stone was there, and of course, our
but
own Rick Bayless.
But and, the cool thing. This shouldn't be obnoxious.
Yeah.
If I'm Dean and it's 114 degrees, I've got one of my minions walking me around, essentially backstage to these tables, and you smile and greet the others as you come up and try it and go, oh, you guys, it's going to be great when you get up here.
Right.
And then you move on to another table.
I don't like to do
that. It was cool hearing Curtis Stone, though, saying he was in food coma. He was hungover because he had had 10 hamburgers the night before, and then he went and had dinner, a 7-course meal at Alinea. So it's kind of cool hearing the celebrity chefs talk about how great our fine dining scene is, or our dining scene.
Yeah, if you're a celebrity chef, I'm sure that it's quite different than the poor
show. I don't know why you're in show business if you're not going to cut to the front of the line.
the poor schmoes pay, it's like $200 a day for admission to this.
It's an awesome event.
And then
event.
You stand in line. Most of the day you spend standing in line.
It's like going to Great America. Dean, I saw a picture of you on the Nude Dude Food Instagram. You look very happy in this photo.
Did I?
Did you say Nude Dude or New Dude?
I met
nude
them.
Nude Dude.
No, I met them yesterday. Dude. It's these guys. They're professional chefs, but they were shirtless. And they had
they're always shirtless.
Aprons on. But I think sometimes they'll actually come to your house completely naked and cook.
I've been to one of those parties.
Yeah, which seems...
Well, hold on a second.
Who wants to be around splattering oil like that?
Well, not just that. Who wants to be around strangers cooking naked? I don't care how good...
I'm fine with
apparently
it.
Mary.
Good, they're pretty fit. It was a group of ladies.
What?
Myself.
No, I don't care how good looking you are. Put some clothes on and cook.
Yeah, it gets hot in the kitchen, Steve.
Cut to the front of the line and put some clothes on.
Well, they were very excited.
And somebody fixed my phone.
Get off my lawn.
We were. I was hosting a cooking demo with Chef Art Smith.
Oh, I love him. Yeah, Oprah's guy.
Oprah's guy. And
did he make you fried chicken?
He made this. I don't even know how to describe it. It was beans and roasted pork and rice.
I'm out. Beans, I'm out.
It was. It was a whole kind of casserole-y kind of thing that was very good. So I was backstage. This was before we went on stage for the demo. I'm backstage with Art and other celebrity chefs. We're all waiting to, you know, go and do our demos. And these four guys that are half naked show up. And big fans of WGN. A lot of big fans of the Steve Cochran show, by the way.
Well, they like the way that I handle things and never whine.
And I met these nude dudes, nudedudefood.com. They were very pleasant.
Were they funny?
Yeah, they actually were funny.
Yeah, I would hope they'd be funny.
Yeah, they're funny. They have a good sense of humor.
Hey, everybody needs a hook. And their hook is their nude.
Yeah, Art Smith and I were threatening to take our shirts off just to spoil the whole thing.
I had one of the best meals ever in the city at Art Smith's table. Was it 52, 53, whatever it takes?
Yeah.
With my mother and my sister's fried chicken and biscuits.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Oh, his fried chicken's famous.
Yeah. You know what it was? It was a fork dropper. You know, where you just take the fork, you slam it down, and go, oh, this is ridiculous.
Right.
It'll never get any better than this. All right, Stevie Wonder and Pharrell, they took a knee at the D.C. event?
They were doing concerts, different cities. Stevie Wonder was doing a concert in Central Park in New York and stopped the show, got down on one knee and said that he was doing it for unity in the country and for peace, then got down on both knees and said that we all should get down on our knees and pray for our country and our leaders and, for unity and cohesiveness that all get together. Pharrell basically did exactly the same thing. He was doing a benefit show in Charlottesville, of all places, and got down on both knees and also said that we need to pray for our country.
Well, there you go. Pharrell then wrote a song about it.
He's happy.
Get on your knees.
I'm on my knees and I'm happy.
J-Lo wrote the check, $1 million.
$1 million. How about that?
Pretty great.
She writes a check for relief in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean. She was alongside Governor Andrew Cuomo saying that she and her boyfriend this week, Alex Rodriguez, mm-hmm. are using all of their resources in entertainment and sports and business to solicit as much money and donations as they can for Puerto Rico.
Good for her.
Where she still has family. She was born in New York but has lots of family on the island. And she's also asking her fans to donate. And Jay-Z announced over the weekend, who is not going to be doing the Super Bowl show because Steve now
I've been offered.
Has been announced.
I haven't decided, but I've been offered it.
Has been offered to do the halftime show. Jay-Z's music streaming company, Tidal, announced that they're going to be doing a big benefit show early October. They haven't announced any of the acts yet, but in the past, Jay-Z and Beyonce have both performed and headlined, so probably will be both of them. More names are coming, but more stars stepping up to help people. All the benefits will go to relief in Texas, Miami, Puerto Rico, Mexico, and other Caribbean islands that were devastated.
I've been told Elmo is also up for the halftime show at the Super Bowl, so it's down to me and Elmo from Sesame Street.
Elmo will be nude, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, and
isn't he always anyway?
And yet still red and furry.
I think he's always nude.
Usually, yeah, it depends. I mean, sometimes he'll dress it up. That's Dean Richards live at Channel 9 on your TV right now. We'll be on CLTV after 9. Thank you, buddy.
Bye.
See you later. And a big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
With the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut, as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you. I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people...
a goosebump moment that if you're old enough to remember it live, you'll always remember. You know, we live in one of the greatest cities in the world, in our opinion, the greatest city in the world, in Chicago, but in a city that's got some significant problems. And once you're a big city, you don't get to hide your significant problems. So dial it back prior to 9/11 and think about the New York many of us knew in the 70s when I first started going to New York, growing up upstate there, and in the 80s, certainly. New York was a mess. Well, you got to find a way to rejuvenate it and rebuild it and redo it. New Orleans has challenges still. Obviously, Miami's going to have issues. Houston's going to have issues. And what are we going to do about Chicago? There's a new book out called Greater Than Ever, New York's Big Comeback, which could serve as inspiration for all of us. And Daniel Doktoroff, former deputy mayor in New York, and prior to that, Bloomberg, and a bunch of other successful stints in a million different places. And if I have this right, Daniel, Sidewalk Labs as well, right? Isn't that your joint?
That's right. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Nice to have you on, because I see you as one of the principal architects in figuring all this out. So tell us, first off, about the book, because get two copies, people. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. It's called Greater Than Ever, New York's Big Comeback. What's the date span that you cover here?
So I was deputy mayor from January 1st, 2002, just 3 months after 9/11,
right,
to the beginning of 2008. And, you know, what the book is about is how we thought about not just kind of rebuilding ground zero, but making New York greater than it ever had been. And the title of that actually comes from Rudy Giuliani, who, you know, was New York's mayor on 9/11. You know, on the day of 9/11, he got up and said, you know, look, New Yorkers are tough. We're not going to be intimidated by this. We're going to work together. We're going to make the city greater than ever. And that's what we did. If you look today at where the city is, I mean, certainly we're not problem-free, but by every indicator of sort of normal indicator success of a city, the population, the number of people who want to live there, the number of visitors, the number of jobs, you know, we're at all-time records, and anybody who comes senses the vibrancy of the place. And at its very core, of course, you know, we rebuilt Ground Zero and then also completely rethought the area around it, Lower Manhattan. So that's really what the story is about. And I think it offers real lessons for other cities, you know, all of whom struggle with the same issues, is, you know, how do you afford to pay for the services that make quality of life better? And, you know, that was sort of what we thought about and how we thought about doing it. And the stories about how you do it for,
yeah,
not just New York, but any city.
And God bless us, because without the tragedy of 9/11, we got to figure out what to do about the problems we have in Chicago, which, by all accounts, down up and down Michigan Avenue and through 75% to 80% of the city, you go, well, it works on every level here. But there's obviously places
right
where it doesn't. Politicians are necessary to make this story be a winning story. They're also a huge pain in the ass. And, you know, we see the Mayor Bloomberg that we know now, a guy with the soda tax issue here. But it was much more than that. And he steps into Rudy Giuliani's shoes. And I would make the argument from a distance here that the success you guys have doesn't happen without Bloomberg. Is that true?
Well, I think 100% true. And I think really on some levels what the book is about leadership. You know, it's one thing to have to solve a problem when there's a crisis sitting in front of you. And look, that's hard in many cases. Believe me, the rebuilding of Ground Zero was incredibly painful on many, many levels. But when you then step back and say, all right, what other problems do we have? What problems can we foresee having? And then you develop the plans based on a really thoughtful analysis of what your competitive strengths and weaknesses are, and you're creative in the way you come up with the money, and you sell your ideas effectively. When people aren't actually calling for a solution just then, that's leadership. We have to learn to think ahead. We can't simply respond to the crisis of the moment. And I really believe that that's the most important lesson of New York after 9/11, that it wasn't just about responding to a crisis. It was sizing up what we can be, what we want to be, and then going for it.
I know we only got a minute here, but Andrea, jump in.
Dan, thoughts
Wait, there is your microphone here. Let me get that back up.
Dan, thoughts on combating crime? I know there's not an instant formula, but Chicago is getting better. Our numbers are getting better as far as violent crimes. There's community policing. We've increased the number of police officers. Any quick thoughts, and I know this is a crazy question, on how to help combat the gangs in Chicago?
Yeah, fix that right now, Dan. Yeah.
We got about a minute, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. New York's problem is obviously different than Chicago's. You know, gangs are much less prevalent in New York than they are in Chicago. The drug trade plays less of a role, I think, in New York than it does in Chicago. But if you look at the history of New York, and crime came down much faster in New York than it did in anywhere else in the country. So New York is the safest big city in America. The most important factors are getting enough bodies out, police out on the street, getting them out of cars, getting engaged with the community, and then very, very carefully, I know this is happening in Chicago now, targeting areas where crime is most likely to occur with the people with whom it's most likely to be, by whom it's most likely to be committed. And there's no simple magic formula for it. It is just lots of blocking and tackling and smart strategy and smart investment sustained over a long period of time.
You know, it's fundamentals, man. It's fundamentals block by block.
That's exactly what it is. It's house by house, block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood.
Greater than ever. I hope you'll
be able to do it.
Whether you lived in New York or didn't, New York is a part of all of us, and New York's big comeback is the story in Greater Than Ever. Daniel Doctoroff, of all the successes you've had, writing a book might be one of your toughest, and well done by you.
Well, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. So, some inspiration there.
Very much right? So. Very much.
Do you remember, Dave, going to New York in the 80s?
Sure.
You had to know where not to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't worry about that anymore.
No, not at all.
And Harlem is now a great destination to go for dinner.
Yeah.
So it used to not, it used to have that stigma.
And the balance in Harlem where you can, you know, the gentrification of Harlem without losing the culture of Harlem.
Right.
And without just packing people up and shipping them out.
Right.
Hey, kids, here's the deal. What was I supposed to do here, Jake, that you just told me 30 seconds ago that I've already forgotten?
I just said continue the show.
Oh, continue the show. Okay.
Yeah.
Last night, John McCain was on the 60 Minutes season premiere, 50th season premiere, and the guy is something else. And you sit there and you watch him, and actually Maureen said this to me, and it's true. It's called, how does he not get elected? And then you remember, oh, that's right, they picked Sarah Palin. Man, that was Barack Obama and the electricity of that in 2008. But having said that, his perspective as he stares down the end of his life and what he's dealing with, I would really invite anybody of any age, if you didn't see it, to watch it online. You just Google McCain 60 Minutes and you'll see it. But along with talking about the fact that he doesn't know what Trump's going to do next or what Trump's going to do tomorrow, and answering the question, no, Trump has never apologized for saying he wasn't a hero. He talked about dying. And he talked about how lucky he's been in life and all the great things that have happened to him. And he's going to fight it. And of course, he's scared. But he's going to fight it, continue to fight it. And he's a very impressive guy. You know, and I know it sounds ridiculous to say John McCain's an impressive guy, but I hope people will take time to see it.
No, he really is.
So,
no matter where you stand politically.
Exactly.
Really
it's not about politics. It's about, in this case, being a man. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. CLTV joins us next on the news on 720 WGN. The Beatles, the Fab Four. Rich Pagano standing by. Best Beatles tribute band ever at the Vic Theater, Saturday, October 7th. Special performance of A Hard Day's Night. From top to bottom and all the Beatles' greatest hits. Get tickets at Ticketfly.com or the Vic Theater box office. If you don't have Paul McCartney in your house with his bass right now, it doesn't get any better than the Fab Four and Rich. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. Wow, that sounds pretty good. I sometimes hear myself sing and say, oh, boy. You know how sometimes you hear musicians always talk about, oh, I it sounds great while I'm singing it. Then I hear it back and I think, ugh, but that sounded pretty good. So I'm not sure where you got that from, but thanks.
But you never, ever sounded like the, God rest her, Linda McCartney, isolated microphone incident from 20 years ago, right? It never got that bad.
No, but come on, that was so not fair because, you know, you, if you isolate any microphone, there's going to be dips in some notes. So, you know, I heard it when it came out, and I may have laughed for a second, but I'll defend the solo microphone.
As you should. As you should. For people who want to keep up with the Fab Faux, where do they go? Your website?
Yeah, thefabfaux.com. Or on Facebook, you can find us there, and we post all kinds of stuff on both platforms.
I feel like we've met somewhere along the way, but when did you realize this was your life?
Well, it's interesting. And by the way, I want to say thanks for having me on.
Sure.
You know, we're so looking forward to returning to Chicago. We love the Vic. It's like New York out there.
Well, it's a great town for you.
Wonderful audience. It is. We're embraced wonderfully in Chicago,
yeah.
And I couldn't be more grateful. But to make a long story short, for me, the Beatles growing up, it was like a narcotic, and still is in some ways. You know, I'm a big production head, so hearing and figuring out how the songs were mixed, how the arrangements were put in place, it's always been a big part of my life. And I was on tour with Willie, our bass player. Will and I started the Fab Four with Jimmy Vivino, Jack Petruzzelli, and Frank Agnello 20 years ago next year. But Will and I kind of were there in the inception, were being on tour together in Europe. And I didn't know Will very well. I just knew him from the Letterman show. And we're on stage, and somehow he felt like my fills just reminded him of Ringo. And after every show, he would say to me, "Man, we have got to start the greatest Beatles band ever." I mean, he knew my love and my knowledge of all the outtakes and deep cuts and such. But I would say to him, "Man, I'm so into it. It would almost be a parody of myself because I kind of play like Ringo and Jim Keltner and everybody from that time." So I declined. You don't say no to Will Lee. And
Will Lee has played with everybody. You know, the only person that's played with more people than Will Lee is Paul Schaefer. And Paul played with Will every night. But Will Lee's played with everybody. And no matter how much success you've had, Rich, and you've had plenty, Will Lee telling you you're great and I want to work with you, how good a day is that?
Well, I kind of said to him, "What else can we do together?" Because maybe it was a bit too sacred for me to get into a Beatles band. But after hearing from Will every week for 4 to 6 months, whatever it was, I said, okay. And it's the best decision I ever made. Hey, you're right. I grew up loving Will's playing. And if you don't become a better drummer by playing with Will Lee, then you shouldn't be playing drums. And we really started this for fun. And it's amazing how it's taken off and how we are embraced throughout the country.
Pretty sweet. How many cities are you guys doing on this run?
Well, it's hard to say run because, you know, Jimmy has his contract with Conan. Jimmy Vivino is Conan O'Brien's musical director. So,
and a full-fledged mafioso, a made guy. I mean, let's be honest. Jimmy's a mob guy. He's a mob guy from way back. He's a made guy. I'm just saying.
He wants you to think so sometimes. But Jimmy, of course, can't tour because he has to be on stage Monday morning. So we basically do Fridays and Saturdays, and we hit the big cities and we hit some small cities too in small towns. But we don't go out for more than 2 dates at a time, which is kind of nice because we all have, you know, families or other scenes that we have going on as far as sessions and other artists that we're playing with. So it's nice to do it and then not do it for a while and then do it again. It keeps it fresh.
Ringo can see 80 from here. He's back out touring again. He's got a new album to promote. McCartney was just at Wrigley this summer and as good as he's ever been. Yeah, McCartney, by the way, how he plays 3 hours without having to pee is rather phenomenal. Because he stays on stage. But what about those two guys? If you, and because of Will's connections and your connections, do you get any feedback from them?
Well, I can tell you that, Paul, they're both aware of us.
Right.
But Will and Paul have had some time together. The concert for New York here at the 9/11, Paul, for the most part, put that together with Harvey Weinstein. And when Paul went out to do his set, he wanted to play Hey Jude, and he asked Will to play bass with him. So they kind of got to know each other on that scene. But there's a documentary that's out about that night, and there's one little snippet of Paul and Will talking. And if you listen close, Paul's asking Will how we solve Tomorrow Never Knows, the John Lennon song, because in our opinion, Paul produced that for John, all those tape loops and the mood of the song.
Right.
And it's great that Will is explaining to Paul that that we went painstakingly found what the loop sounded like and recreated them ourselves. We always recreate the Beatles sounds. We really don't use any of their sound bites in our samplers, because to do the show right, we do have to have samplers and extra musicians on stage and extra keyboards and such. But we create all of our sounds without going into stealing anything.
Well, it's just the ultimate sign of respect to take the tribute that you guys do whenever you're on stage, Fridays, Saturdays, whenever, and to walk away where people feel like they saw a completely fresh show and done at the highest level. You should be proud of that, man.
I'm incredibly proud. And I have to add that we do take liberties. If whoever is coming to see us in October 7th, you'll notice that we kind of stretch it out a bit. We'll do outros longer. Jimmy will take a bluesy Mike Bloomfield Clapton type solo, and I'll sometimes throw in a little bit of Keith Moonisms at the end of songs, just so that we kind of put our own personalities into it all. But also, we are honoring the music. We've painstakingly gotten it
right
to 99% of where the records sound like. Having said that, if the Beatles toured today and they had a band around them, how would that band approach the music? And that's also a big part of our approach.
That's the respect right there. And by the way, because I'm a first-time grandfather, I have asked Rich and the band to do the Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round as a special treat for me.
Maybe the encore will think about it.
Pair of tickets for the Feb. Yes, sir.
By the way, I just want to add, and Ringo and Will did meet each other a bunch of times. Whenever Ringo was
right
on Letterman, it became a bit of a bit between the two of them. Not, of course, off camera. Well, we always have a pin. We create a new pin every season, and every time Ringo would come on, Will would offer Ringo a Fab Faux pin, and Ringo would put his glasses on, take a look at it, and hand it right back to Will.
Right.
Say, what do I want with this?
Right. I was there. I don't need the pin.
It became like a badge of honor.
Sure, of course. The Fab Four, greatest Beatles tribute band of all time at the Vic, Saturday, October 7th. Special performance of A Hard Day's Night in its entirety. Here's what I'm going to do. Jake, what are you going to do? Caller 720? 720, is that what we're going to take, 720 calls?
Yeah, that's fine. 721, I was thinking. So,
caller 7 at 312-981-7200. Safe travels. Thanks for coming on, man.
My pleasure.
See you later. Rich Pagano from the Fab Four. You know, this is more your music, Dave. I just missed the Beatles by that much.
Mm-hmm.
But the first record I ever had was
Sergeant Pepper?
No.
Hey Jude?
First 45. I ever had was I Want to Hold Your Hand.
And you know what the flip side was?
I do not.
I Saw Her Standing There.
Which is an even better song.
The one that Tiffany did?
No, I'm kidding. Yes, the Tiffany version.
I'm kidding.
Yes, they covered the Tiffany version. It's 9:18. Got some sound to play for you from the weekend. Stand by, this is 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, show number 995 at Cochran Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, 312-981-7200 is the phone number and text number. Anytime for anything. Sound from the weekend's festivities. After Trump used the kneeling controversy in the middle of his speech in Alabama on Friday, because he loves that applause and got some applause, he got a ton of criticism. Ton of criticism, including from the New England Patriots owner Bob Kraft and other owners. Bob Kraft is a guy who has given Trump a lot of credit. Said he was there for me when my wife died. He's a friend. He'll always be a friend. But Bob Kraft was upset, and I don't know any owner who hasn't spoken out now, right? Including the owner of the Green Bay Packers, or the managing partner of the Green Bay Packers, which is owned by regular folks, the majority of which I assume vote for Trump.
Yeah, Mark Murphy is the president of the Packers.
Right.
And he was heavily involved in the NFL Players Association back in his playing days.
Right.
With Washington.
Right. So
he spoke out. Tom Brady has spoken out.
Yeah, and Brady's another guy who Trump considers a friend.
Right.
Trump, however, you know Trump, Trump never says he's sorry. Listen.
I was not watching the games today. Believe me, I'm doing other things. But he has to take his ideas and go with what he wants. I think it's very disrespectful to our country. I think it's very, very disrespectful to our flag. I like Bob very much. He's my friend, but he gave me a Super Bowl ring a month ago, right? So he's a good friend of mine. But and I want him to do what he wants to do. But we have a great country. We have great people representing our country, especially our soldiers, our first responders, and they should be treated with respect. And when you get on your knee and you don't respect the American flag or the anthem, that's not being treated with respect.
Are you claiming racial tensions, sir?
No, this has nothing to do with race. I've never said anything about race. This has nothing to do with race or anything else. This has to do with respect for our country and respect for our flag.
Terry Bradshaw took the president to the woodshed. The deep thoughts of Terry Bradshaw now.
I'm going to say something about the most powerful man in the greatest country in the world, but probably like a lot of you, I was somewhat surprised that the president of the United States came out attacking NFL players for them exercising the freedom of speech. While I don't condone the protest during our national anthem, this is America. If our country stands for anything, folks, what? It's freedom. People died for that freedom. I'm not sure if our president understands those rights, that every American has the right to speak out and also to protest. Believe me, these athletes do love this great country of ours. Personally, concentrate on serious issues like North Korea and health care rather than ripping into athletes.
And Puerto Rico, where American citizens are still stranded. Chris Collinsworth last night on Sunday Night Football. Listen.
I would say he should apologize. They're not SOBs. They're smart, thoughtful guys. They really are. They've seen things that are unimaginable in some cases. And they want exactly what the president wants. They want a better America.
Right.
Their version of how to get there is different than the president's. I understand that. But I guarantee you, if the president invited, I can make a list of 10 guys to the White House and heard their stories and heard their thoughts and heard how concerned they are about America, that they would find a common ground and they would move this forward. And I think an apology for the SOB comment right off the top would go a long way.
He doesn't apologize, Chris.
No.
He doesn't. He doesn't apologize.
No. I thought he was great last, Collinsworth.
I think he's great, period. Yeah, but I thought he was great on this issue.
But I think it was the SOB comment that really, really cut deeply.
Yeah, well, you know, it makes it personal. Makes it insulting and personal. And I can almost guarantee you that Chris Collinsworth and Terry Bradshaw voted for Trump. I know the next guy did. Here's former New York Jets and Buffalo Bills coach Rex Ryan.
Like, I'm pissed off, I'll be honest with you. You know, because I supported Donald Trump. You know, I sat back and when he asked me to introduce him at a rally, you know, in Buffalo, I did that. But I'm reading these comments and it's appalling to me. I mean, you know, calling our players, you know, SOBs and all that kind of stuff. The men that I know in the locker room, I'm proud of. I'm proud to be associated with those people. Because right away, I'm associated with what Donald Trump stands for and all that because, you know, I introduced him. I never signed up for that. I never wanted that. That doesn't mean I support 100% of the things that he says. And clearly, this is a case.
You could have guys, and this happened yesterday. He took a smaller problem and made it a huge one. A story about whether or not the former quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers ought to be playing or not playing. Colin Kaepernick's not the story anymore. No. Now the story is the president of the United States thinks you're not entitled to your First Amendment rights. Once again, Donald Trump put a landmine in front of himself, and he stepped on it. John Oliver from last night, summed it up.
I'm afraid it is true. The president of the United States took time out while, it is worth noting, over 3 million American citizens in Puerto Rico are without power to call Colin Kaepernick a son of a b-. Kaepernick's own mother, incidentally, magnificently responding, guess that makes me a proud b-. And that was one of many catching responses to Trump. Many more players took a knee this afternoon, and even NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell denounced the president's comments. And when you have lost the moral high ground to Roger Goodell, something is horribly wrong.
And finally, to clear the palate, I think one of the great highlights of the weekend, because Dave was off this weekend. It was bye week for Northwestern football. Coming back this weekend to play
the Wisconsin Badgers.
Pushovers.
Go Cats.
That'll be Saturday when?
That will be Saturday, 11 a.m. kick in okay. Madison.
Go Cats.
A squirrel got loose on the field at Louisville and Kent State on Saturday. And if you're calling the Louisville-Kent State game, well, this probably is your highlight.
I like his pad level, James. Open field runner. Yeah. Hey, look at him go. The 20. Wes, he might do it. Wes, he's going to do it. Oh, my goodness, buddy. Do it. Do it. Do it. Touchdown. Oh, man. He's my favorite squirrel. Look at him. Oh, poor guy. He's tired. That's not a great celebration. He's working on a celebration.
Got worn out.
You know.
I'm not saying that.
Ever since Kevin Harlan did the play-by-play, that guy running on the field last year in a Monday night
Everybody's
game,
doing it
everybody,
now.
Anything happens on the field.
Everybody's going nuts.
Let's do play-by-play.
Yeah, well, you heard how the squirrel feels about it.
Yes.
Say your thing.
No, I'm not going to.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I wrote down they went nuts.
The crowd went nuts.
Can I just say that?
Crowd went nuts. Did you say the same thing? All right, so both of you leave.
Well, you thought it was Andrea. No, I wrote it
down. No, she wrote it down
a few minutes ago. I said they went nuts.
Like it was a match like game match. Answer.
And I told them I'm not going to say it.
It's 9:30. Big story next. What are you talking about?
Oh, the NFL.
Next at 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
.941, the president just banned kittens and puppies. Kittens and puppies and rainbows have been banned. He's taking on the big events of the week, the weekend, and the days ahead.
Come on, some of the gifts and the memes that are coming out now?
There's a meme with a picture of Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan from the, where are those games?
Oh.
Was it, it wasn't Nagano.
90?
But it was the, it was the.
90?
Tanya Harding, where were they?
Three.
Wasn't it
93,
94?
Yeah,
no,
where
it was 94.
They?
It was in Lillehammer.
Lillehammer.
Well, it was actually in Hamar, Norway.
Ah.
And by the way, Hamar to you, too.
That's so specific.
But it's a picture of Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan sitting next to each other for a photo op with a caption, back when taking a knee actually meant taking a knee.
Taking it in the knee.
And it's funny, too, because when Trump did that Friday night, I went, why? What was the Facebook? Patty Vasquez here. How are you?
I'm very well. It was an interesting weekend.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
Patty Vasquez show, 11 p to 2A, or in other words, like we'd call it, the dead of the night.
It's pretty late.
For us.
It is pretty
for
late.
Us. Yeah. Yes.
For you, yes, for you guys. You are. This is like the middle of the night for me right now. This is very strange.
It's nice of you to get up and do this.
Oh, thank
you. But
it's
a great plug for your show, I suppose, right?
Well, I love seeing you.
And it's nice to see
hanging out
back
with you guys. Hello.
You too.
All right, so you throw a Facebook question up last night after the fire of the weekend, which is pretty simple straightforward. And it said what?
It said, should we create legislation forcing people to stand for the national anthem?
Should there be a law on the books that forces people to stand for the national anthem? I'm guessing it blew up like you wouldn't believe.
It was, I am up to 175 comments. And for the most part, really, actually very well-tempered. Everyone's being respectful of each other. Many people saying, I served in the military. And then going from there, saying, I stand for your right to express yourself. And other people saying, the flag, I've arrived at my destination. others saying, I fought for you. And you should respect those who have fought for your freedom. And you should stand for the flag. And the flag means everything. So...
I have said it a million times this morning. I would never not stand and salute the flag. But I don't have any more right to that than the person who takes a knee and doesn't. I don't agree with the stance or the lack of a stance.
Right. Half stance.
But I defend the right to do it. And you can make the argument, obviously, that the men and women who died in fighting for this country fought for the right for people to exercise their freedom of speech, whether any of us agree with it.
I think one of the most incredible things that happened yesterday is how many people shared stories about what it means to be an American, regardless of where you stand on this issue.
Yeah.
In particular, did you see the photo of the World War II veteran from Missouri, the farmer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's
Are we sure he
like
didn't
that.
Just fall?
Oh, That was you, not me.
No, he took a knee because he was saying the same thing.
Yeah, saying the same thing. So, I mean, I think that people sharing their stories about people they've lost, people that they love, their own experiences, this has been really an out. I mean, there's a lot of rage as well. There's a lot of demands. There's a lot of misinformation. I've had to share the NFL rule book more times than I thought I would have to, but there is nothing there is no mention of the national anthem or the American flag whatsoever. The football players do have to be on the field 10 minutes before play, but it doesn't say for the national anthem.
Well, and it's football now because it's the season and it's Colin Kaepernick. It won't surprise me if this happens in baseball as some sort of show of support, an extension of the show of support. It would certainly be happening in basketball if we were in basketball season now.
Well, we kind of are because the teams are reporting today, and Mark Cuban has already come out and told his players that feel free to use Media Day as a forum to express your views on what the president said. And
that's an interesting juxtaposition, though, to what Mike Tomlin did yesterday with the Steelers. The Steelers head coach, and obviously their team wasn't quite ready to play. You lost to the Bears. But Mike Tomlin said, these guys are here to play football, and I don't want the distraction. And I told the Bears yesterday, we're not coming out for the anthem. Now, you
except
could take
for,
that.
Wasn't it Alejandro Villanueva?
Yeah. Yes.
He was the one guy that came out. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but he was saying up front, this is not a disrespect to the flag. It's we're here to do a job. I'm paid to coach this team. I'm making a coaching decision. We're staying in the locker room.
Interesting.
Yeah. And there were reactions all over. You know, the Jacksonville owner standing up arm in arm with guys. Mm-hmm. But football locker rooms are probably as emotional a place as anything.
Absolutely.
And it's the ultimate team sport. And what the president did was took a discussion of whether Colin Kaepernick was good enough to play football anymore and turned it into a national discussion about freedom of speech. Not because he's a genius strategist, because he shot his mouth off in his need for applause.
I don't know. I'm starting to wonder. I mean, like, this really was just a Colin Kaepernick story. You know, we'd even lost the idea of why he did it in the first place, which was brutality and the lack of opportunity for black people across the country. And he has raised almost $1 million in communities to reach out and try to help. But yeah, it became more of whether or not he should be playing. And did he? Yeah, it's certainly created a lot of conversation about what it means to be an American. And I find that fascinating.
He may be back now. This is the weird offshoot of this. There may be enough pressure now where one of the owners will take a shot at him.
Is he that good? I mean, I don't know enough about
his stats. He's good enough.
Well, the problem is, and this is the point I think I made on Wednesday, Steve, when we were talking about this, is that he has to be in the right system, and teams aren't running that offense.
Yep.
So, and now you're three games into the season. You're not going to throw out your playbook and come up with a new offensive system.
Well, now you're on technical stuff, Dave.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I think that there are many layers to that. It's not.
I tell you who I'd sign today. I'd sign Colin Kaepernick's mother.
Yeah.
Because
Colin
Kaepernick's mother's response was as good as anything. By the way, breaking news, we've received word Anthony Weiner has been sentenced to 21 months in jail.
Mm, okay. Wow.
Which to me seems light. The guy's going to need longer than that. But 21 months in jail for Anthony Weiner.
Think about what you've done.
Think about how you phrase things.
I'm not sure he's going to have a lot of friends in prison. You know, he's not a charming guy like Rod Blagojevich who has taken his prison life and turned it into a positive.
Good on the computer, apparently.
Well, it all depends on how you define good on the computer. More with Patty Vasquez in just a second on 720 WGN. Patty's up before she's supposed to be. It's almost bedtime for us. There's a new study out this morning that says the shorter you sleep, the shorter your lifespan.
What? Why you got to ruin my jam this morning?
No, I'm just telling
dancing.
You.
I'm dancing over here.
And there is a Medical News Today article out. Is my subscription to Medical News Today current, Jake? Is it Medical News Today? You know how much I like to read it.
I update it in March.
Here's what we know. Factors that contribute to good sleep quality in adults. You have to fall asleep in 30 minutes or less. Fall asleep in 5 minutes.
Otherwise, give up? What happens?
It means you're out of sleep cycle.
I've mastered that. Give up.
Wake up for under 5 minutes once per night.
Okay.
Nah, it's at least a couple of times for me.
I was going to say, I'd probably get up two or three times. Well, not get up, but wake up.
Dave, how much time do you spend trying to pee during the night?
Oh.
Pardon me?
Being asleep for 85% or more of the total time you spend in bed. You know what'll keep you awake? Trying to figure out the percentage of how long you've been awake or asleep.
Do you guys all get up to go to the bathroom?
Well, I don't. What do you have, a catheter?
Try to sleep through it. Otherwise you overwake up.
Exactly.
And can't get back to sleep.
Oh yeah, I sleep through it.
Because once you get up and you walk over and you go through the motions, it's hard to fall back to sleep.
I never have that problem unless I take the elevator down to the servants' quarters. Being awake in the night for under 20 minutes, you can still get a good night's sleep.
Okay.
Says if you're awake for 41 minutes or more, it's over for you.
Give up. See, that's what I'm saying?
Yeah. Waking up four or more occasions in the night. If you're waking up four or more times at night, you got a prostate problem, my friends. And by the way, I'm including the women in that as well. Mm-hmm. Sleeping for less than 74% of the time you spent in bed. Again, I don't know how you figure out the percentages. And taking more than an hour to fall asleep. Who takes more than an hour to fall asleep?
Mm. People who get into bed with their phones.
Or the TV.
Or they're reading the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're not really trying if you're online or if you're watching TV, are you?
Sometimes I'll be in bed and try to fall asleep, and I'm like, all right, now what's happening on my Facebook feed?
You know, I do that too. And they say you're supposed to put your phone away, an hour before you go to bed?
Yeah.
That's kind of hard to do, right?
You know my fancy schmancy new phone?
I want to see your toy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just made Nick's show.
Your phone.
But my fancy schmancy new phone has a blue light filter because there's a new study out that says blue light, when you wake up, the blue light that emanates from the brightness of your phone screen is bad for your brain. And it turns the screen kind of a tint of orange.
Oh. Isn't that the light they use for crime scenes when they put the blue light to see if there's
a problem in the room?
You have to try that out.
Yeah. I think you're thinking of the Channel 2 investigative team.
With the hotel.
Oh, dear.
Let's plug something. What do you want to plug on your own show?
I'll be, we have some music on tonight. We also have the Lincoln Square. There's an Apple, they have their wonderful Apple Fest coming up in Lincoln Square. So we're going to talk about that. I'm sure we'll talk about legislating patriotism. And I think the conversation there will be about, you know, let's make America great, period. A place where our pride is stronger than our fears. So we're talking
like
about that tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. Dave, you were going to say?
My phone has something called Night Shift. This is on the iPhone.
Are you working third shift now?
Night
or what?
Shift?
Night Shift automatically shifts the colors of your display to the warmer end of the color spectrum after dark. Oh. This may help you get a better night's sleep.
Yeah, well, it's a similar thing, except mine's cooler.
Yes, it is. Yes. No question.
It's some sort of opacity filter. Opacity? O-P-A-C-I-T-Y.
It's more opaque.
Opacity. Opacity.
So tonight you'll go over the Facebook findings.
Yes.
By tomorrow at this time, we'll have solved all the world's problems.
Right. Well, you know, in all the conversations about patriotism, there's also a lot of great organizations we're going to talk about. One's opengratitude.com. You can send a care package to an active duty member. You can also, we know our friend Mark Doyle, who's got the Rags of Honor.
Yep.
And you can also donate airline miles to fisherhouse.org and sponsor a service animal at puppiesbehindbars.com.
Puppies behind bars? They're putting puppies in jail?
Yes, they are. They're locking them up. Remember you said Donald Trump was getting rid of puppies, kittens, and...
I was hoping I was kidding. Patty Vasquez every night, 11 p. to 2 a. And on social media, where?
At Patty Vasquez, CHI. Okay. I don't know why I did that, but also Patty V Show on Facebook. Thank you.
Google her up. It's 9:57. Bill and Wendy next.